Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Speedy Digest. Tonight, we don't have no guests, but our panelists, Kyle Magda, Joseph Wolkin, and Glenn Locke, and myself, Brett Langham, will take you through a action-packed show tonight, which is kind of short, but hope everyone's having a good night, and how are you guys doing?
I'm doing well, buddy. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah, it's NASCAR. We get Daytona, guys.
Yeah, you know, this weekend's definitely going to be very interesting. And, you know, I can't wait to watch this. Definitely going to be one of my favorite races of the year to watch. But we're going to get into that a little bit later. And hope everyone's having a day, and hope everyone had a good week, too, since we last talked on Wednesday.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great race weekend. We have a ton to look forward to at Daytona. Every year, it's a blast to watch that night race. I remember, I believe it was 2005. Kyle, correct me if I am wrong, but I believe it was 2005 when the race ended at like 3 a.m. when Tony Stewart won.
I think you're right. I don't know how late it was, but like what I remember from it is like we had that free NASCAR in-car free preview with pay-per-view, and I didn't stay up for the race. So, but no, I think you're right. I think it just because it rained. I think it rained. It was a big rain delay. It didn't start till like 10 or 11 o'clock, I think.
Yeah, that was nuts. Past my bedtime room.
Hopefully that doesn't happen because on Sunday I'm going to a Marlins and Cardinals game, so I gotta go to bed right after.
You need to go to a Mets game.
So.
We gotta get you a NASCAR Mets game. We're gonna make that a thing. We're gonna combine the Mets and NASCAR and see what New Yorkers have to say.
All right, our first topic is known as Indy Camping World Truck Series. We only have two topics that series is off this weekend, and the first thing we're going to get into is Kyle Busch gets a penalty following Kentucky, and, you know, it was certainly interesting in learning after the race that the number 51 front end was found being too low. And NASCAR issued a penalty on Tuesday, which is NASCAR's penalty day, pretty much. That is a P2 level infraction, violation of Section 20B-12.8.1, truck failed to meet post-race height requirements of the 2014 NASCAR Camping World Truck Series rulebook. As a result, its crew chief Eric Silt was fined $5,000, and owner Kyle Busch was penalized with the loss of 6 championship truck owner points. And I know Joseph was texting me all excited earlier about how this can compare to Chase Elliott. And Joseph, what are your thoughts on this penalty?
Well, it's basically Kyle Busch Motorsports was fined for the same thing that Chase Elliott's team was for JR Motorsports, but on the Nationwide side, obviously it is a different scenario now. Both of them were considered P2 penalties. It doesn't matter what. However, Kyle Busch was also, not Kyle Busch, but his team, Eric Phillips specifically, was fined $5,000, as you said. In the JR Motorsports case, Greg Ives, Chase Elliott's crew chief, wasn't fined a single dollar. And basically, the only thing that happened to the team was they were put on probation. NASCAR probation is not extremely strict, as we've seen in the past. So this is a little controversial, considering it's the exact same penalty. However, I'm guessing it's probably bigger, number one, because he won the race and did so in dominating fashion. When your truck is too low or your car is too low in front of the truck, you get more downforce, which helps your straightaway speed. Obviously, Kyle Busch had a lot of that this past weekend in Kentucky. But the difference between this and that one was, according to an article from Bob Pockris from the Sporting News, he said that it's basically because what they did was NASCAR has a lesser penalty in JR Motorsports because they adjusted the specifics to the truck series after the beginning of the season. Whether or not that's a good thing is questionable, but it's what it is. And I believe the penalty fits the crime.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, like what Joseph was just saying about the penalty and everything. I mean, the only thing I see out of this is who it hurts is probably the team, the 51 team, because, you know, they're going for the owner's championship, and, you know, Kyle Busch Motorsports has had some of the best equipment this year. I mean, it doesn't matter who's been driving the truck in the 51, whether it's been Eric Jones or Kyle Busch, or even Darrell Wallace Jr. in that point. Those trucks have been fast all year. And, you know, I think Toyota's won every race so far this year, so I think it's going to continue. But, I back to the penalty, I mean, you know, I think some fans, especially the people who don't like the Cup drivers like Kyle Busch running the trucks, I think it's kind of like, you know, they're like laughing at him because, you know, he got a penalty, you know, because everybody, that's just how everybody is, you know, they don't like the Cup drivers on the lower series. And just, you know, they're probably like, you know, probably thinking like good 4 years or something for Kyle with winning the race. Or, you know, getting the penalty. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's gonna be just a slight, I think just a slight thing just for that team. I think they're going to be all right. Because, you know, like I said, their trucks have been fast all season long. So, I think it's going to continue.
I agree with you, too, and we'll go green.
Well, the penalty is definitely not going to hurt that team. I mean, come on. We've seen tough drivers get penalized before in the series. I mean, take Michael Waltrip when he won the Daytona 250 back there when his rear spoiler fell flat on him. And there were also a couple other drivers that got penalized back there. So this is just pretty much a slap on the wrist. Kyle Busch will be back and running trucks for the rest of the year.
Thank you, guys. So, all right, now we're going to review the UNOH 225 this past weekend. Kyle Busch, of course, captured the victory in the number 51 Toyota. There was here, which is another truck owned by Kyle Busch, finished second. Third was Ryan Blaney. Fourth, Timothy Peters. Fifth, Brad Keselowski. Sixth, Matt Jackson. Seventh, Austin Dillon. Eighth, Ron Horner Jr. Ninth, John Sauter. And tenth was Ben Kennedy. And the time of race was 1 hour, 43 minutes, and 5 seconds. The average speed was 130.962 miles per hour. There were 6 crashes for 23 laps under yellow, and the margin of victory was 1.844 seconds. And some interesting stuff happened during this race, but it's kind of drawn out, it seemed like. So what do you guys think of the truck race for those that watched it, and just kind of give a thought?
Well, you have to evaluate the entire race weekend, Kentucky, really, not just one race. And I have to say, this weekend of racing was abysmal. Kyle and I were talking about this all weekend long, trying to figure out what's wrong with the Kentucky Speedway. Why isn't the racing up to par like it used to be at the track? And the answer really is because it's not a Spring Cup Series caliber of a racetrack. It's just that simple. The track shouldn't have a Spring Cup Series race. It's nothing that's nothing against the track. It's just the specifics of the track really are not meant to be for the Spring Cup Series. It's just that simple. You just look at the type of track. It's like Las Vegas, how it used to be. It's just not a track that can handle the horsepower. It's just the aero package on the cup cars are not meant for the style of a racetrack.
You know, I was thinking as you were going down with that statement there, Joseph, Now, what if, you know, that track, as we all know, we've heard debate all weekend about that track possibly needing a repave here in the next 2 years or so. You know, could that be something to look at doing, you know, kind of changing the racetrack to make it better for the racing?
I mean, the thing that you have to do for the Cup Series is, number one, more short tracks. It's not going to happen next year because it's just not going to happen. However, the only possible time that I see this happening, anything that has to do with the schedule happening, is going to be around, I would say, 2016, 2017, when a lot of the contracts with racetracks are going to expire then. That's the only way I see it happening. Other than that, I really don't see anything really happening in terms of getting new Spring Cup Series races on the schedule, because you already have 36 races. It's the perfect amount. It's not too little. It's not too much. It's just right. Don't add any. Don't subtract any. However, you need to keep that 36 number intact. But for the future, you need more short tracks. That's a given. You need more short tracks. You need more road courses. Road America would be a perfect road course for the Cup Series, I believe. It's a high-speed road course, similar to Lock and Glen, kind of, in a way, except it's just longer. So it'll be, and plus, who knows, maybe we can even have rain tires, which would certainly spark some interest in NASCAR, considering everyone makes fun of it, that they don't race in the rain. So that would kind of, you know, shut everyone up.
Same, though. No one, you know, everyone goes to 1.5-mile racetracks or the bigger tracks, and then no fans show up to the short tracks, so, you know, or the road courses. So, you know, there's something that they need to do right there, because if no one's going to show up to the short tracks, then why have more of them? You know, you look at Gateway, for an example, 2 or 3 weeks ago, no one really showed up to the race. I mean, it was a pretty terrible crowd.
They didn't show up because it was just, not only was it just a standalone race, but you were also competing against the Cup Series in Michigan, I believe it was. So that takes away fans right away, because people are out, especially considering they're in kind of the same area, not really, in like the same sector of the country, we could call it. And people are going to choose to drive those extra 2-3 hours to see the Cup Series and the Nationwide Series over just watching the Truck Series at a track that they didn't know what to expect, and that's why no one showed up, because they didn't know what to expect. But now that they know what to expect from that racetrack, I guarantee you, next year it's going to be crowded as can be.
Okay, and, you know, after me and Joseph debated here, I'm going to throw it over to Glenn and Kyle for their time.
Well, to borrow a quote from Jimmy Johnson, pretty much he called Kentucky a whiplash speedway or something. But I would disagree with Joseph on a few parts. First of all, number one, we don't need more short tracks, because there's not enough short tracks that can hold 43 cars. If you want to see short tracks, then go support the lower divisions like, you know, K&N and all those other ones. Now, in terms of other tracks, I would think maybe we should return to a track like Rockingham. I mean, that track has been off the schedule for about 10 years now. In fact, I believe it's been 10 years since we've been there. And I think a lot of fans would want us to go back to that track. In terms of going
to
Road America, which is
Let me stop you there. Let me stop you there. What happened with Rockingham was, number one, they defaulted on their payments. That killed them after they got the Truck Series race. And after those Truck Series races, by the way, how many people were in the stands for that? Not too many. It was dead empty there, and the racing was horrific. I mean, that just did not work out. And that was with the pavement really not being repaved for a while. And usually when a track doesn't get repaved for a while, the racing gets better. But for this case, for this specific track, the racing just did not work out. And yes, it is the Truck Series, and that is different from the Cup Series. And I do believe that it would be a good track for the Cup Series, considering how they're racing right now in this era. But at the same time, you need a track that not only fill up the stands, but get high ratings. I don't think Rockingham would even be able to do that anymore, say, if they did have the money to reopen it again after shutting down last year once again for the second time.
I think the Star Cup Series does bring more short tracks. I mean, you look at some of the, you know, things the last couple of years that went on the short tracks, you know, they've really gotten a lot better. And so, you know, I think it's time that NASCAR could add a couple more to the schedule. And, you know, I'm sure our friend Matt Weaver, Joseph, and Kyle would all agree with me on that. And, you know, Kyle has not shared his thoughts, surprisingly, on this topic. So I'm going to throw it over there to him before he bashes me with something.
All right. Well, I've listened to what all you were saying. And first I want to start with the truck race before I get off topic here. You know, I think Joseph kind of onto this on Saturday night during the Cup race broadcast is, you know, Kyle Busch, of course, who won on Thursday night. And, you know, Kyle said he was saying, oh, Brad Keselowski's dominating tonight. He's going to win the race. You know, he had the best car on Friday night, the nationwide race, had the speeding penalty and finished second. And he had the best truck on Thursday night, and he finished fifth. Well, I think Kyle Petty forgot that Kyle Busch was running the truck race Thursday night, so I think he forgot about that, because I think Kyle had a better truck than Brad. I mean, Brad had good trucks, but, you know, I think Joseph found that pretty fast, but, I noticed that. I mean, but I agree with you guys. I really think, you know, Kentucky, that Cup race was not good at all. I mean, I think, I was talking with another buddy of mine, I think it was more to do with the tires more than anything. I mean, I know Kentucky's worn out and hasn't been repaved since they opened in 2000, but I think it had more to do with the tires and the lacking of passing all night. I mean, that was horrendous what happened. I mean, and I agree with Joseph. I don't think it's a Cup track at all. They took a race away from Atlanta to run at Kentucky, and I hate to say this, but Atlanta is a much better racetrack to race on, and that's another worn-out surface, but they've produced some great racing there. So, but, you know, I think with what's going on, you know, when you're talking about adding tracks to the Cup schedule, I mean, Rockingham, I mean, I kind of disagree with Joseph there because, I mean, I think the racing was all right, honestly, when they came back with the trucks, and even ARCA ran there a couple of years as well. You know, I think it was all right. I know it wasn't really, when you look at it, it wasn't repaved. They just kind of threw blacktop over it, but still it was the same Rockingham. You know, when you had, in 2013, you had Joey Logano coming from, like, 16th to 2nd and almost won the race in the truck race. So I think Rockingham's a great track. I mean, you know, but, you know, with not paying those payments, yeah, that really hurt them. And, you know, and on the road course side, I think Road America would be a great, great place to run the Cup cars. And, Joseph, I know you were saying, like, Watkins Glen. It's more like Watkins Glen. I think it's a lot like Watkins Glen, a little bit of Watkins Glen and Sonoma. You know, you have the long straightaways, and, you know, you go down, you know, you're going on the front straightaway. And then, you know, you have those technical parts of the track as well. So it's a little bit of Sonoma and Watkins Glen. Of course, it's about twice as long, 4 miles. So, I mean, with that, the thing in the future, I mean, they can always put Sonoma in the chase and then give Road America the date in June, you know, with the Nationwide Series, and maybe even bring the trucks as well, or even ARCA in that case, because they had a great race there last year, but they didn't run here this year. So, I mean, there's a lot of possibilities, but, you know, with Kentucky, they're going to have to work at it, you know, to get a successful race next year if they still want it, because, I've seen 4 races there so far, and none of them have been appealing to me.
Well, I agree totally.
Yeah, I think he nailed it on the head.
What?
Why? What's so funny?
I don't know what's
he nailed it on the head.
Oh. Alright, well, I guess we're done with that topic. So now...
Well, sort of not. Sort of not, because... Hold it, guys. We were sort of not done with it because I got stopped at Rockingham, and I'm about to say my thing on Road America. I mean, you guys are saying that the Cup Series race is needed at Road America? No. IndyCar needs to go to Road America, because here's the reason why.
I agree.
The Cup the Cup cars would be okay there, but you need to look at it in the entertainment kind of way. The Cup Series cars are too heavy for Road America. The Indy cars shipped around there when they were in carts. So I think if you guys really want a date, first give it to us to run an Indy car race there. Then maybe if that attracts more people, then maybe we can attract an Indy car NASCAR race to go to Road America. So basically, put Road America for us in Indy car at the beginning of the season, and then you guys can invade it in June. That way, both parties are happy, and also Road America gets a buttload more of viewers and numbers and all that kind of stuff. So that's really what I just want to say about Road America, is that right now, no Cup Series race, IndyCar before NASCAR race, really.
Yeah, Glenn, I couldn't
agree
with you more.
I think the IndyCar Series would be great there.
Hey, Glenn, I just want to add on what you were saying, that I talked to Mark Landretti, Ryan Hunter-Reay, and Graham Rahal. This was about 2 weeks ago at the Pocono IndyCar test, and all three agreed that they want to go back to Road America. They want IndyCar to return to Road America. I'm all for that because, you know, like you've seen in the past, there have been some really good races there, and it's, you know, like I said, since the kart days. And I really think that'd be a really great racetrack for them to add to the schedule, hopefully in the next couple of years.
All right, guys, I have to go. Have a great show, and have a good night.
Bye.
I'll see you.
Alrighty, we'll move over to NASCAR Nationwide Series now. The first topic, I tried finding in my email so I can get more information, and I can't find the stupid thing. So I'm going to try and do this off the top of my head. Benny Gordon found a sponsorship this weekend with the Back Company to race in number 91 for TriStar Motorsports at Daytona this weekend. And I'll start with Kyle. Your thoughts on this opportunity for him, as he'll be making his first start in the series since 2012, where he ran 11 races that year.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing for that whole team. I mean, I hope that team will run the whole race on a Friday night. You know, I think they've shown the speed in these races, the super speedways. You know, you saw David Starr leading that race late at Talladega. And, you know, Mike Bliss is always going to be good. I think he got a sponsor as well today. So, you know, I think that team, they could be an underdog. I mean, whoever's driving the car, whatever car is it, whether it's a 91, the 44, the 10, or the 19, I think any of those guys, I mean, they could be a possible dark horse in the race on Friday night. Because, like I said, Talladega, you know, you saw David Starr leading the race. I mean, they have the speed. So they can definitely, you know, and pretty much the same with all super speedway races. Anybody can win them. So anybody who's in that race on Friday night could win.
Oh, yeah, definitely. What he said was absolutely true. And, yeah, seeing Mike Bliss back in the series, that's pretty cool. I just saw a picture of the car. It's pretty much plain white with sponsor logos on it, so it's not going to be that hard to find him. But it's good to see him back, and who knows? He could be the sleeper pick for this race.
And, I think it's pretty neat to see him back in the sport, and hopefully he has a good outing on Friday night, and should be fun to watch those two cars go around the track as they go for the race win, and they're definitely going to be strong, that's for sure. The next topic is Rob Racing. We have a couple news items from them. One we'll get on to a little bit later in the Cup Series side, but they will run a second car this weekend with Scott Legacy Jr. in the number 29 alert today, alive tomorrow, Toyota. And, you know, some interesting driver mixes for this weekend. And I'll start with Glenn this time. Your thoughts on seeing him back in the series?
Oh, I think it's great seeing Scott Legacy Jr. back in the Nationwide Series. I mean, we saw him in the Truck Series, and he was doing pretty well. And you know, I'm glad that he's got another opportunity. I am not sure if that 29 car will be up to par for the nationwide race, but just like what we said earlier, anything could happen. I expect a top 15 finish from him.
I think this is a really important race for the Pole RAB racing team, not just Scott Lagacy. You know, I think, you know, when there was preseason testing, you know, you saw James Buescher showing a lot of speed. And, you know, they didn't win the race, but still, I think you know, they could be definitely good on Saturday or Friday night. So, you know, it's good to see Scott Lagacy back in the car this week. You know, like I said, his dad, of course, with the road racing background he has, he was a great road racer. I mean, I never saw when I was alive, when I was alive, I never saw him race his father. But, you know, I think with Scott Lagacy, you know, I think Junior with I think he's gonna have a chance. You know, I like you said, it's open to anybody. You know, I think he and James Buescher, maybe they get going, maybe they could find a bit for the lead, because, you know, those races are, you know, those nationwide races, you know, especially Friday night, they're always good. Especially the July race for Nationwide at Daytona.
Oh, most certainly. And, all right, this past weekend, the NASCAR Nationwide Series took to the Kentucky Speedway for the John R. Elliott Hero Campaign 300. And the time of race was 2 hours, 15 minutes, and 33 seconds. The average speed was 132.792 miles per hour. There was 7 cautions for 30 laps in the yellow. The margin of victory was 0.928 seconds, and there was 8 total lead changes. Kevin Harvick captured the victory by leading only 14 laps of the night, while Brad Keselowski, who came home in second, started on the pole and led 138, which was the most of any driver during the evening of the 200-lap event. Finishing in third was Kyle Busch, who was trying to continue the drive for the triple, which came out short Nationwide race. Finishing fourth was Paul Menard, and fifth was Brian Blaney. Finishing in sixth was last weekend's winner at Road America, and that was Brandon Gaughan, who finished sixth. Seventh was Ty Dillon. Eighth, Brian Scott. Ninth, Kyle Larson. And tenth was Elliott Sadler. And that is a interesting race, as we saw a couple multi-car accidents. You know, on lap 70, we saw an accident involving Reagan Smith and Ryan Reed, and then we also saw another one on lap 193 that involved Trevor Bain and Chase Elliott, which a lot of people did not like that caution as nothing really, you know, I don't know why it was room, but I'm sure we'll debate it here in just a second. And I'm going to start off with Kyle on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was an okay nationwide race. It wasn't fantastic for the most part. But, you know, when I look at racing, I look at the entire race, not just the finish. You know, and I think when Kevin Harvick won, you know, and I think Jim Utter brought this up on Twitter, and I pretty much hit the nail on the head with this. You know, when Kevin Harvick wins, you know, there's crickets. You know, nobody. There's crickets. That's his quote when he won that race. Nobody was complaining or whining about him, a Cup driver, winning. But when a guy like Brad Keselowski or Kyle Busch wins, then it's a whole different story. You know, and I thought about that for a little bit, and I'm like, yeah, you know, that might explain a little bit. You know, I mean, you know, like that caution. I mean, I don't think I got to see the race, but I followed the leaderboard. You know, I thought it was more serious than I thought it was, but it wasn't. So, I mean, that's up for debate, but, you know, it's, I don't know. I mean, the race was okay. I mean, it's Kentucky like that. I mean, once in a while, you know, I think it's more, like we said, it's more, for me at least, it's more of a nationwide truck series kind of type of track. You know, I've seen good races there in both series. So I think, you know, with Nationwide, I mean, usually they have some pretty good races. You know, like you've seen guys like Ryan Blaney, they were running up, he ran about top five all night, you know, and he won last September, so I think the racing was okay. It wasn't great, but it was okay. Just good enough this weekend, you know. But like I said, it's up for debate what you want to say, what happened those last 15 or 20 laps or so.
Glenn?
Yeah, you know what? That Nationwide Series race was fairly tame, but that ending was very weird. And that last caution definitely didn't need to come out because, you know, they didn't even spin, they didn't even crash or anything like that. I feel like that when Trevor Bain when he got sideways and kind of brushed the wall a little bit, I think NASCAR may have thought that he had dropped something on the racetrack, but that caution is what helped Kevin Harvick, because if you rewind the tape back to like 8 laps to go, Kevin Harvick's car was getting tighter and tighter and tighter the longer that they were running. That caution allowed him to cool off his tires, and then he was able to make the pass and go on to win the race. Had that caution not have come out, Kevin Harvick would have probably dropped back further. In fact, I think he would have finished fourth by the end of the night.
Interesting. And I thought it was an okay race myself, too, you know, and I agree with Jim Utter, you know. And, you know, Blaine has heard my rants before on podcasts, but it's so stupid. I mean, if it's a double standard. If people get mad that, you know, Kyle Busch or Brad Keselowski wins, but then don't when Kevin Harvick does, then don't complain when those other two drivers, you know, go victory lane. Like, just stop. But anyway, I'm going to stop my rant there. And, all right, now we're going to preview the Firecracker 250, which is sponsored by Subway this year at Daytona National Speedway. And there are 45 cars on the entry list, many interesting new faces and different names, and different cars include Casey Cannon, the number 5. Blake Cook will be in the number 10. Oak McCoy will be back in the number 14. Tanner Berryhill will be down in the 17. Mike Bliss will be in the 19. Darrell Wallace Jr. will be in the 20. Joe Logano will be in the 22. Robert Richardson Jr. will be in the 23. I'm not sure if they're going to just use a practice and the qualifying as a test session or not this week like they did last week at Kentucky, but John West Conley will be in the number 25. Colin Gasly Jr. will be in the number 29, as we talked about earlier. Kyle Larson will be back in the number 42. David Starr will be in the number 4. Ross Chastain will be in the number 55. Again, Derek Cope will be in the 70. The 74 will be driven by Mike Harmon. Johnny Sauer will be in the number 80. Chad Boat will be in the number 84. Bobby Gerhart will return to the Nationwide Series this weekend to drive the number 85. The number 87 will be driven by Carlos Contreras. The number 91 will be driven by Benny Gordon. The number 93 by Mike Wallace. The number 97 by Joe Nemechek. David Reagan will be in the number 98 this weekend, which we'll be making our picks later on for this race. So, let's take it over to the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series side, where some interesting news has come out this week, just on a couple of things. The first news story of which that we're going to be covering is Joe Nemechek will drive the number 29 Toyota for Rab Racing, and that racing team will be making the Sprint Cup Series bait, and also crew chief Chris Rice, who has been in the Nationwide Series for a long time, will move over for his crew chiefing debate also in the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series for this car. And we're going to start with Glenn this time, since I believe we started with Kyle the last time.
Ah, all right. Well, Joe Nemechek running the number 29. That's kind of a surprise, but also it's pretty cool the fact that he's got a ride for the Sprint Cup Series race. Unfortunately, of course, he's a go or go home car, but he's also got a good owner in Robbie Benson. I mean, it's it's going to be interesting to see if he makes it, because obviously we do have the threat of rain for all the days at Daytona. So you better hope that that it doesn't rain on qualifying day. Otherwise, he's going to be the lone car heading to the house.
Yeah, I think it's a good. I think it's good for Joe Nemechek. You know, hopefully he can run the whole race. You know, he happens to make it. You know, with RAB Racing, they did try to make the race back in 2012, at least the Daytona 500 with Kenny Wallace, but it didn't happen. You know, Kenny fell a little short, but hopefully they'll be able to make their debut this weekend. And, you know, Joe Nemechek gets that 29 car into the field. Hopefully no weather gets in the way.
Yeah, you know, that's not a good situation or a good word to hear going into a race weekend about rain, but hopefully it'll be a dry weekend. All right, our next news item, which was a pretty big deal on Saturday, and that was the news that Joe Gibbs Racing extends Matt Kenseth's contract, and also along with this, Dollar General will increase the sponsorship to 30 races. Just a little note, side note on this topic, that Home Depot did, it was kind of leaked out that Home Depot is going to be leaving the team. So, you know, kind of interesting right there, but it has not been announced yet by the team or Home Depot. So, I'll start with Kyle again on this one.
Yeah, I think, you know, with sponsorship, I don't think, you know, that'll be an issue now with Matt Kenseth, even though you know, it appears Home Depot might be leaving at the end of the season. But, you know, I think it's good for that whole organization. You know, I think Dollar General really likes Matt Kenseth. You know, I mean, from last year's results, you can definitely see it. And, you know, and Matt Kenseth's been in the hunt a little bit this year. He's been close, but he hasn't won yet. But I think that team might win here in the next month or two. But I think it's good for that organization. I mean, a lot of people or some people thought the announcement might be about Carl Edwards, but, you know, with that clause in his contract, he can't say anything until September. You know, I don't think we're going to know anything until then.
All right, Glenn.
Well, it's definitely good to see Matt Kenseth signed up again for the number 20 ride, and pretty much I think the writing was on the wall for Home Depot, really. I mean, a lot of people are sad to see it go, but, you know, there was a lot of factors that really led into them leaving. I'll only give you like two of them, you know. Number one, when Jimmy Johnson started on his tear of winning five championships in a row, you know, Home Depot, I think, was pretty sick of playing second fiddle. And then when Tony Stewart left to go run his own race team and they brought in Joey Logano, instead of finishing fifth or better in every single race weekend, the Home Depot car finished 25th or worse in a lot of the races that Logano was in. So I think that they've had it playing second fiddle to Lowe's, and they just are moving away from NASCAR. So really the only hardware places that would have their own race would be Lowe's and Menards, really.
Well, I think this is very interesting. You know, first of all, you know, if Home Depot does end up leaving, you know, it's definitely going to be weird not seeing a Home Depot car, a car with Home Depot on the side of it. So, you know, it's definitely going to be interesting there. You know, an interesting question is also going to be, who's going to fill in for these other six races that Dollar General isn't on? All right, our next news item, which will be our last one before we head over to Glenn's open rule report, and that is Michael Walker to return to number 66 this weekend. And my question for Glenn and Kyle, and we'll start with Glenn, is will he be a contender this weekend?
It's a definite yes. Michael Waltrip, anytime when he's raced or hit the plate races, he's done really well. I mean, there was one time where Michael could have won at Talladega had it not been for Tony Stewart to screw up him and Casey Mears as a of a two-car tango. Although Michael may not qualify as high as you want him to, when it comes for I had a good point here. Oh, yeah. When it gets down to crunch time and we're down to, like, maybe 40 laps to go, Michael Walter's going to find a way to the front, and I wouldn't be surprised if he and Dale Earnhardt Jr. Tag team together and one of them ends up either in victory lane, or Michael could easily get a top five or a podium out of this race, just as long as he avoids the big one and doesn't get shuffled back on any late race restarts as we've seen in the past.
Yeah, for sure. I really think Michael Waltrip's always a contender, you know. He's always up front leading those races, and really, yeah, like Glenn was saying, you know, he doesn't get caught in the big one. Usually he'll be up there. And, you know, he likes running these restricted plate races, and, you know, I think it's nothing new. I mean, Michael Waltrip enjoys running these races and when he wants to, and he's always a factor. I mean, you know, he didn't have the greatest speed weeks, but this year, but, you know, it happens. But, you know, I think he's going to come back. You know, he'll be a contender, and we'll see what happens on a Saturday night.
All right. And actually, before we go into Glenn's open world report, we need the preview or review Kentucky and preview this weekend at Daytona. We're going to start with Kentucky. Brad Keselowski captured the victory after spanking the field and leading 199 of the 267 laps total of the event, finishing in second with Kyle Busch, who led 31 laps of the night. Ryan Newman finished third, fourth, Matt Kenseth, fifth, Dale Earnhardt Jr., sixth, got four, and seventh was Kevin Harvick. Finishing eighth was Casey Kane, ninth, Joey Logano, and tenth was Jimmy Johnson. And the time of race was 2 hours, 51 minutes, and 59 seconds. The average speed was 139.723 miles per hour. The pole speed was 188.791 miles per hour. There were 6 cautions for 34 laps under yellow. The margin of victory was 1.014 seconds. And there was 12 total lead changes throughout the night. And there was some multi-car accidents, which a big one that involved a total of 4 cars on lap 154 that involved Jimmy McMurray, Casey Kane, the number 23 of Alex Bowman, and the number 43 of Eric Almirola. And then it was pretty much all single-car accidents, nothing really too big. So what was your thoughts on the race, Glenn, if you was able to watch it?
Well, I definitely got a chance to see the Cup Series race. And, yeah, another team race, but slightly on the boring side, but yeah, Brad Keselowski, that American Flying Blue Deuce was really good that night, and you know, he could do no wrong and all that, but I think the only wrong thing that happened is the fact that he sliced his hand open while celebrating, and so hope that hand gets better. Which, you know, luckily we're at Daytona where you really don't need your right hand that much, except for downshifting the pit road and then upshifting on the yellow flags and stuff like that. If the car is that good, he can almost drive the thing one-handed.
Kyle?
Yeah, I think both Penske cars were just scary good on Saturday night. I mean, I already said the racing wasn't that great, and I'm going to stick by that. I didn't think it was that great. I think, like I said, I think tires had an issue to do with it, like for the lack of passing. You know, but, you know, Brad Keselowski, when I think of this win, I think it's kind of a, I guess you could say redemption from Pocono. You know, he almost had Pocono won until he tried to get the debris off his grill late in the race, and, you know, Gale Jr. wanted to pass him for the victory. But, you know, I mean, Brad Keselowski could do no wrong that night. You know, even though Kyle Busch got the lead, Brad still worked his way around him. And, when I saw that two-car running down the 18, I mean, it was pretty much it was just a matter of time before Brad got by. But, you know, I just want to give a quick shout-out to that whole 31 team of Ryan Newman and Richard Childress Racing. First top five of the season, and I think, you know, and they're sitting pretty good in points right now. So I think they're close to winning their first race this season, and I think, you know, with, even though they didn't have the fastest car, they had a top five car, I think that team may hit victory lane here in the summer months.
All right, and the next race for the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series will be the Coke Zero 400 at Daytona National Speedway, and this will be the first race. And this race kind of marks the halfway point for the year until the season finale at Homestead. And this weekend there are a total of 44 cars on the entry list, and last week we had 42. So luckily this weekend we'll have 43, which I know it doesn't really matter, but, you know, it's just kind of neat to see 43 on that list. And some few notables, Trevor Bang will be back in the number 21, as Joe Nemechek, as we discussed earlier, will be in the number 29. And then Michael McDowell will return to the number 95 this weekend, as well as Michael Waltrip returning to the number 66. And no cars have yet withdrawn from the event. So, yeah, we got a pretty good entry list right here. And we'll get on our picks a little bit later after Glenn's open wheel report. And we're going to throw it over to Glenn. And then Kyle will also join us for the open wheel report, as he will be in Pocono this weekend for his Times Leader. So I guess take away Glenn for the open wheel report and pick following.
Thank you, Brett. That's right. And the Ride in IndyCar series was in action last weekend. It was the doubleheader, the Grand Prix of Houston, or excuse me, the Shell Pennzoil Grand Prix of Houston. Let's get the name right. And both races were very, very crazy, but had some great excitement. In fact, we're going to take a look at race number one right now. So, starting on the front row would be Simon Pagenaud and Elio Castroneves. And just as we are starting Saturday, it had rained. In fact, they had a massive rain shower during the night, and then it cleared up a little bit, but it made for a very wet surface. So, IndyCar declared it a wet start and also a wet standing start. That's right, we were going to do a standing start in the rain or on the wet track. So how well did it go? Well, I think it actually went pretty well, so why don't we go ahead and get these cars started. It started with one light, then two, then three, then four, then five. The lights went out and everybody got a good start, including Takuma Strato, who makes it three wide, past James Hinchcliffe and Luca Felipe, and I was able to pick up a few positions, and unfortunately one car did not get going. That was Graham Rahal in car number 15. He stalled it on the grid, so it wasn't exactly a perfect start for him. Meanwhile, up at the front, Takuma Sato muscled his way past Byron Pagenaud, past Elio Castroneves, to take over the race lead and held it for a long time. Trouble for Marco Andretti as he gets spun out by his teammate Carlos Munoz in turn number one. Trouble continues to mount for Marco Andretti. And this is where a lot of things get a little controversial. There's a rule in IndyCar where if you are on the tail of the lead lap or if you're multiple laps down and the leader's right there behind you, you will be shown the blue flag with the yellow with the yellow diagonal cross. When you get that, you need to, you know that there's a faster car behind you and that pretty soon here you're going to have to let them go. Well, he ignored that. So, finally, he gets shown the blue flag, and when that gets shown, you definitely have to let him go by. But he ignored that, too. So, IndyCar threw the black flag on Marco Andretti. Marco finally let Takuma Sato go by, and unfortunately, they would also fine Marco Andretti $2,500 for that and place him on probation for the next three races. Now, as the track was starting to dry off, cars and teams were deciding on whether or not they were going to go from the wet to the slicks, and if it was dry enough to go over to the slicks. Well, some teams had the slicks, and unfortunately it didn't work out too well. It didn't work out too well for Russian driver Mikhail Elishin, who hit a wet spot and slammed into one of the barriers. It also happened to Mike Conway, who ended up having a little problem and ended up in the tire barrier himself, which also brought a full course yellow. And Sebastian Zavedra on a separate part of the track ended up losing his front wing. because he was using slicks, still on a very wet track. So the green flag flew once again, and this time it was James Hinchcliffe at the front with Takuma Sato right there behind him, and moving up through the field. Oh, Sato gets into a wreck with Mikhail Aleshin. Sato came down on Mikhail and ended up taking both cars out. That would end Takuma Sato's day right there. So the green flag came out again. Hinchcliffe is still in the race lead, and now Elio Castaneda is breathing down his neck, but trouble for Luca Filippi as he slams into the turn 10 barrier and then into the inside barrier on the front straightaway. So that would take the young Italian out, and it's a shame because he was running top 10 at the time. So back again, take three for the green flag, and at this point, it's Sebastian Bourdais who's starting to make the moves. He makes the pass around the yellow submarine car of Elio Castroneves and was now setting his sights on James Hinchcliffe. Meanwhile, further back in the field, suddenly Scott Dixon slams into the turn three wall, collects Simon Pagenaud, which bends his right front A-frame in, and Charlotte Kimball also gets collected as well. These cars would end up falling out of the race. Pagenaud did get back into the race, but unfortunately, he would only get out there just for points, and that would ruin his day for the most part. Meanwhile, so back up at front, Hinchcliffe, Bourdais, and Castroneves are leading the pack, but also coming up in the rear is Elio Castroneves. Now, Will Power has a little problem. He ends up on the slick tires, he hits the wet spot, and he spins out, which would bring out another late race caution. Now came some interesting pit strategy here. Some cars came in, others did not. At the front of the field is a very odd pairing. It's Justin Wilson who's leading with his teammate Carlos Fuentes. Both cars at the Dale Coyne race. So during the final couple laps of the race, Justin Wilson was leading and was trying to make the field hold out. But unfortunately, fuel mileage would catch up to him, and so Justin Wilson would have to make a pit stop to make it all the way. So that was with about five laps to go. And then a little trouble coming to turn number five, as I can't tell who that is. That is Ryan Briscoe, who spun out Sebastian Saavedra, which would set this race up for a one-lap dash. So everybody is behind the pace car. A pace car is about to pull in, and there's trouble in the rear. Tony Kanaan ends up getting spun out by Graham Rahal. Just before the green flag came out, Graham Rahal jumped on the gas and ended up spinning out TK. Now, that was pretty bad because that would screw up the restart, so the race would end under the yellow flag. And that would give the win to the young Colombian. Carlos Fuentes wins race number one of the GP of Houston, and it was also a rare all-Colombian podium, with Juan Pablo Montoya finishing second and Carlos Munoz finishing third. This was the first win for Carlos Fuentes. It was also the first win for Dale Coyne Racing since last year in Detroit, when Mike Conway took home the victory in the first race of the Detroit GP. So let's stay with the finish in order from this race and see where your favorite car finished. We mentioned the podium was Carlos Fuentes, Juan Pablo Montoya, and Carlos Munoz of Colombia. Sebastian Bourdais finished fourth. James Hinchcliffe finished fifth. Jack Hawksworth finished sixth. Seventh was Ryan Hunter-Reay. Eighth was Marco Andretti. Ninth was Elio Castroneves. And running up top 10 was Justin Wilson. Now Graham Rahal is credited with the 11th place finish. Excuse me, my voice is going out. Because he was given a 30-second time penalty after the race. So what would have been a finish in the top five bumped him back to a finish in 11th. Ryan Briscoe also got a 30-second time penalty for spinning out Sebastian Saavedra, so he finished 12th. Tony Kanaan finished 13th. 14th was Will Power. 15th was Sebastian Saavedra. 16th was Simon Pagenaud. And then the cars that failed to finish the race, Mike Conway finished 17th. Charlie Kimball finished 18th, Scott Dixon 19th, Joseph Newgarden 20th, Luca Filippi 21st, 22nd, Takuma Sato, and 23rd was Mikhail Aleshin. Now, I don't know if you, Kyle, or you, Brett, saw any of the action in race number one, but just based off of what I was able to give you guys, what did you think of the race?
Yeah, I didn't watch much of it, but I did follow this timing and scoring, and, you know, I mean, I was kind of... I do hear what happened with Graham Rahal and Tony Kanaan. I mean, Graham Rahal was, I know he stalled right at the beginning of the race, And then, you know, that making that furious charge toward the end of the race, trying to work his way back. I mean, that was great to see. But, you know, until that whole thing, you know, with IndyCar rules, it's a little different than NASCAR. You know, the races, they don't have green white checkers, but they do it under the caution, you know. I thought it was interesting, you know, going with the rain tires there, and, you know, with the time, I like the time races. I don't know why. You know, I think it's supposed to be more strategy there, you know, like you saw with Carlos Huertas winning. And something I want to add, you know, with Carlos Huertas winning, you know, I know IndyCar announced a penalty today that I think he got fined. You know, they found something in this car that, you know, I don't know. Glenn, you probably know better than me. I mean, I've seen glances of it, but, you know, it definitely was a great run, you know, seeing all the Colombian front row. But I kind of forget what happened with Carlos Huertas today with the penalty that IndyCar issued.
That's right. As a matter of fact, thank you for reminding me. Yes, the winner of race number one, Carlos Huertas, unfortunately, I was fined $10,000 today for two infractions on the winning car. They violated the fuel cell capacity and the height of its right rear wing. So the right rear wing, I believe, refers to the tail section that is in the back there. And the fuel cell capacity, these cars have a set fuel capacity. And probably what happened is that the teams might have found a way to save a little bit extra fuel, especially underneath that yellow flag. Now, he will not have the win stripped from him. The win stays, but he's just been fined the $10,000, which basically is $5,000 for each infringement. So there is, let me see here, there is no probation. There is none of that stuff. So Huertas still has the win. His team is $10,000 less. So now we move on to race number two, and this time it was going to be a bit sunny, and also it was very hot there. And I should mention this before we go to race number two, and Kyle brought it up. Race one was definitely a timed race, and the reason why is because, you know, this is a street course race, and also IndyCar races have a 2.5-hour time window to get the race in at most tracks. If they were at a regular road course, like, say, Sonoma or Watkins Glen, or a oval, like Auto Club Speedway, for that matter, they could race at any time, just that there would possibly be a curfew at, like, Sonoma because they don't have sufficient lighting there. At Auto Club Speedway, you know, if they're running a day race, no problem. We'll flip on the lights, and we'll race until 5 a.m. in the morning if we want to. So that's one reason for the timed races. So at the front row for race number two, it was Elio Castroneves who took the pole, and starting second was the young Mikhail Aleshin. No standing start for this one. This was a rolling start. So why don't we go ahead and get this race underway, and my video decided to freeze up. There we go. All right, so a beautiful formation as some of the other cars were trying to catch back up to the front of the pack. Green flag flew, and Elio Castroneves got the jump on Mikhail Aleshin going into turn number one. Mikhail goes in behind him. Simon Pagenaud is right there in third. And then trouble for Carlos Huertas. We were just talking about him. Something quit in his engine, or something quit in the car, and unfortunately his day be done on lap number two. But just before all that, Charlie Kimball had a great start. He went up about four different positions. Just a little bit later in the race, trouble for Scott Dixon once again. Dixie, unfortunately, had some trouble in the front end, and I believe that there was a suspension failure on his car. So that would really end his day right there. Meanwhile, during pit stops, Graham Rahal is able to get ahead of Mikhail Aleshin and pretty much be over on the race lead. And they almost had a little incident there in turn number four. Meanwhile, Elio Castroneves and Simon Pagenaud are bumping and banging a little bit as Castroneves is trying to hold off a very fast Simon Pagenaud. Trouble for Carlos Munoz. He was on the podium in race number one, but unfortunately, he ends up hitting the turn 10 wall and puncturing a tire, and that would screw up the A-joint back there. So tough break for him. So the green flag flew once again, and now Sebastian Bourdais is up there in first. Simon Pagenaud makes a great bonsai move on Elio Castroneves to take over the race lead. So now Elio is trying to make a move on Simon Pagenaud, but ends up cutting in front of Bourdais and ends up taking himself out by slamming into the wall. very similar to what happened to Takuma Sato and Mikhail Elishin. So Elio's race was done. But one race that was certainly not done was for Charlie Kimball, Marco Andretti, and Will Power as they were making their way up to the front. So for Joseph Newgarden, as something broke on the right front of his car, I believe it was a brake rotor, and that would take him out of the race. And as a matter of fact, thank God he was able to stop it before there was any more damage done. Green flag once again, and now Pagano is in the front with his teammate Mikhail Elishin in second, and then Marco Andretti ends up putting Justin Wilson into the turn 6 tire barrier wall. And there was no penalty taken for that. In fact, there actually no action done for that. So green flag again. And now Jack Hawksworth. That's right. The young Jack Hawksworth is now coming up into the first spot. Everybody is darting all over the place. Ryan Briscoe and Ryan Hunter-Reay cut corners. And then a great battle in the back of the field for Juan Pablo Montoya and Jack Hawksworth. This is a battle for the top three spots. Juan Pablo Montoya, I mean, I gotta say, he was on fire this race. I mean, he was absolutely fantastic. And trouble for Takuma Sato again as he ends up overshooting one of the turns and slammed it into the tire barrier. So, what was going to be a good day for Sato turns bad once again. So bad luck for him in both races. So green flag once again, and now it's Will Power who started way back in 18th. At the start of the race, is now up there in third. Meanwhile, Jack Hawksworth is still battling Juan Pablo Montoya. This is a battle for the fourth spot, and it almost got a little ugly back there. And then, as they were going, all of a sudden, Will Power ends up skidding through one of the corners and has to, give back the advantage a little bit. So, on the white flag lap, it was all Simon Pagenaud at the front of the field. Pagano has really become an excellent driver. And then trouble for Will Power as something breaks in the rear end of his car. That would take him out of the running. But coming out of the final couple corners, Luca Felipe ends up in the wall. Tough break for the Italian driver again. He ends up in the tire barriers. But at the front of the pack, it is the Frenchman, Simon Pagano, who ends up winning Houston race number 2. And his teammate Mikhail Elishin finished second for a Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports 1-2 finish. So a fantastic finish for that team. Let's stay with the finish in order and see where your favorite driver finished. So as I said, Pagano and Elishin finished 1-2. Rookie Jack Hawksworth earned his first podium of the year. He finished third. Charlie Kimball finished fourth. Sebastian Bourdais finished fifth. Ryan Hunter-Reay finished sixth. Juan Pablo Montoya finished 7th, Ryan Briscoe finished 8th, 9th was Marco Andretti, and lining up the top 10 spot was Tony Kanaan. Will Power finished 11th, Justin Wilson finished 12th, Mike Conway finished 13th. I am very surprised that Mike Conway was not a fast car this time because on these styles of road courses, Conway excelled. James Hinchcliffe finished 14th, Luca Felipe finished 15th, 16th Graham Rahal, 17th Sebastian Saavedra, Scott Dixon finished 18th, 19th was Takuma Sato, 20th Joseph Newgarden, 21st Elio Castroneves, 22nd Carlos Munoz, and 23rd is Carlos Fuertes. So good job for Simon Pagano and Carlos Fuertes. So now where are they going to go for this weekend? Well, the Variety IndyCar Series is going to a track that some fans love and other fans hate a lot. It's the Pocono IndyCar 500. This will take place on July 6th, and it looks like it's going to be a 2-day event. Practice will begin early in the morning at 10 a.m., and will go until about 11 a.m., and then there will be a second practice, and then there will be qualification. And I believe that there will be the Indy Light, Super Tire Indy Light Series going on with this race. So Pocono, or as people know that I call it Snorkono, because we have seen some boring races in the past, This is a very tricky track. I mean, they call it the tricky triangle because it has three corners. But this race is very hard on motors. And so if any teams are listening right now, if your motor is close to that magic mile counter, I suggest that you go ahead and change the motor and take that 10-point penalty if you want to survive and win at this track. Otherwise, if you want it to blow up out there, then that's fine. So So, yes, this race is also part of the Triple Crown, which means Ryan Hunter-Reay has a chance to complete Part 2 of the Triple Crown. Part 3 will be out here at Auto Club Speedway for the MAPS-TV American Real 500. That comes in August. So we'll see if Ryan Hunter-Reay can do it. And so I'll bring in my buddies again, Kyle and Brett. And so, guys, what do you think of Pocono? And do you think that Ryan Hunter-Reay can complete Part 2 of the Triple Crown?
Yeah, well, first off, I'm going to be there. I'm going to be at the race on Sunday, so I'm going to be there for the second straight year. So I'm looking forward to it, you know. And I think, you know, there's a lot of differences when you compare Pocono from this year to last year, at least with the teams and everything. You know, Andretti Autosport switched from Chevrolet to Honda in the off season, and Chip Ganassi went from Honda to Chevrolet. So I mean, you know, last year I don't know whether you saw the race or not, Glenn, but there was a lot of Chevrolets had fuel issues late in the race. It was only a 400-mile race, but Chevys had issues, including Marco Andretti, who dominated most of the race. So and then Honda won, taking 6 of the first 7 spots, with Chip Ganassi finishing 1-2-3. And pretty much, when you think about it, it's pretty much a change Scott Dixon's season around. You know, he won the race, then he went on to win the next, both the doubleheader out in Toronto, I believe. So, you know, he won 3 in a row and pretty much, you know, won the championship. So I think, you know, that was really a turning point for that whole team. You know, and it's going to be interesting to see who comes out on top. You know, I really think Pocono is a great IndyCar track. Last year, returned for the first time in 24 years. You know, and Kurt ran there until they had some issues with, I think they might have went bankrupt, or Pocono might have went bankrupt. I'm not entirely sure about that, but in 1989, but you know, with them coming back, you know, it was a nice thing to see. And last year it was 400 miles because it had to fit into a three-hour time window with ABC. So this year, with the race being on NBC Sports Network, the race has increased from 400 to 500 miles. And actually, last year's race went pretty fast. 160 laps, 400 miles went pretty quick. And, you know, and I think 500 miles is just perfect for the IndyCar. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to it. And, you know, I'm gonna be interested to see how, Andretti Autosport does this time around. You know, not being in Chevys from last year and being in Hondas this year.
Yeah, pretty interesting. And of course, you know, I've expressed my displeasure of IndyCar being there at Pocono. So really all I got to say for it is that I hope the race is done as fast as possible so we can get to the next weekend. So we'll have what picks on the IndyCar race for that. We're not going to do any picks for the Cooper Tire Indy Lights series this time because we're going to save those for next weekend at Iowa. And I'll explain why next week. All right. So now let's go over to the F1 series where we have a really, really, really cool treat for you guys. But before we get to that treat, We got to preview the race first. This weekend, the F1 series invades one of the most popular tracks on the F1 circuit. It is Silverstone International Raceway for the Formula One Santander British Grand Prix. This old 18-turn road course is a staple on the calendar. Next to Monza, next to Monaco, and also next to other places because A lot of the F1 teams are stationed out there, in Great Britain. And this track will definitely test everybody's equipment and will also test a lot of patience. There will be one DRS activation zone and detection point. The DRS detection point is going to be between turns 2 and 3 before you get into the village turn. And then coming out of turn number 4 and going through turn number 5, that is where the DRS activation zone will be up until you get out of that straightaway to get into turn number 6, the Brooklands turn. And plus, for anybody who's new to the show or new to F1, the DRS is the drag reduction system. When that is activated, the rear wing, not the whole assembly, but there is a rear wing piece at the back that suddenly drops down, and that gives the car a 60-horsepower boost to make the pass. And I think, like, back in 2010 and 2011, you could activate it any time you wanted to. But that made for some very odd racing. So F1 decided to regulate it. So that's why there are tracks on the circuit that only have one DRS detection point and also activation zone, and then there are some that have like as many as two or sometimes even three, but it's rare that we see some with three. So we'll definitely have picks for this race coming up in just a little bit. 52 laps will make up the running, and the lap record here was set last year by Mark Webber at a 133.401. I'm not sure if that lap record is going to go down this year, but we'll see what happens. Now comes an excellent treat, and I think Kyle and Brett are going to love this, because I have here in my hot little hands a 2015 Formula One sneak preview. That's right. We're going to sneak a preview into the future and see what we got coming up. So, as we already know, there's only about 5 teams right now that have their drivers signed, and they are Ferrari, Force India, Mercedes, Red Bull, and the Williams team. So let me go backwards here, and I'll explain it. At Williams, you're still going to see Felipe Massa and Valtteri Bottas. Red Bull Renault will still have Daniel Ricciardo and Sebastian Saavedra. Mercedes will have Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton. Force India's got Sergio Perez and Nico Hülkenberg. But at Ferrari, we'll still have Kimi Raikkonen, but Fernando Alonso is up in the air. He's listed on this paper as being with Ferrari. But there were rumors saying that he was going to leave Ferrari at the end of this year. So we'll put a question mark on that and see what happens as we go along. Of course, we already know that the Haas F1 team, the Gene Haas team, has pushed their date back to next year. So the entry submitted by the Romania team will end up taking its place. Also, Honda is set to return as an engine supplier. They'll provide McLaren with a V6 engine and also the energy recovery system package as well. Also, big news from the Caterham team. Tony Fernandez announced that he was selling his Caterham F1 team, and it's now been confirmed the sale of the team has been sold to outfit to the Swiss and Middle Eastern investors. So it's been advised by Formula One team principal Colin Coles, I believe the last name is. So the team has been saved for the most part. Also, as of right now, there are 23 Grand Prix currently scheduled to take place in 2015, but this could change. So why don't we go ahead and go down the tracks that pretty much will be on the schedule. And they are the Yas Marina Circuit at Abu Dhabi, the Melbourne Australian GP, the Red Bull Ring in Austrian, the Bahrain International Circuit in Qatar, Circuit de Spa de Francorchamps in Belgium, which of course Belgium beat us in the World Cup, the Autodromo Roncardo Teixe, Sao Paulo, Brazil, the Brazilian GP, or Interlagos between the lakes, Silverstone, Circuit de Villeneuve in Montreal, Shanghai in China, the Nürburgring for the German GP, Budapest, Hungary for the Hungarian GP. The Buda International Circuit is set to return this year. However, they could end up being pushed back to 2016. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with that race. Also, Monza, the Italian GP, it's been in the news because Bernie Ecclestone has said that he would be willing to say bye-bye to it in 2016 if the Tennyson picked up. Bernie blowing off some steam, or has he got something up his sleeve? We'll find out. Suzuka Japan is also back in the bus. The Sepang International Circuit of Malaysia is back as well. Circuit de Monaco, the Monaco GP, of course, is always back. The Marina Bay Street Circuit in Singapore for the Singapore GP is with us as well. The Circuit de Barcelona Catalunya, the Spanish GP, is also back. And also Circuit of the Americas in Austin, Texas for the United States GP. So those are the races that for sure are going to be back with us. But there's actually a couple that I didn't mention that could see us on the calendar. The Grand Prix of America was to take place in New Jersey this year. But unfortunately, due to funding and all that kind of stuff, they ended up getting off the schedule. Also, we could be racing in Baku, the Baku Street Circuit in, oh boy, how am I going to say this? Azerbaijani. Okay, the Azerbaijani GP is a possible race. That's one race that that would definitely be back would be the Mexican Grand Prix. It hasn't been raced since 1992 at the Autodromo Heroes Rodriguez in Mexico City. And, of course, many of you NASCAR fans remember that track because the Nationwide Series ran there from 2005 to 2007. Brett, what was the...
It was 2008.
Okay, thank you. 2005 to 2008, yes. And, of course, CART has raced there, too. So it's good to see the Autodromo Heroes Rodriguez back on the schedule. I like saying that. All right. Then we also have the Russian Grand Prix, which is going to be on the Sochi International Street Circuit in Sochi, Russia. In fact, the track is going to go around the Olympic Gardens and also the place where they held this year's Winter Olympics. So it's going to be really, really cool. I failed to mention the Korean GP. I don't think we're going to see Korea back on the schedule, so possibly 2016 or 2017, whichever one comes first. Also, and this is the final part here, there's a couple of rule changes, and this one I definitely am going to bring you, Brett, and you, Kyle, into. The procedure for restarting a race after the safety car period, or actually after the safety car has been deployed, will change in 2015. So listen carefully. Instead of the traditional single-file rolling restart with the pace controlled by the race leader, the drivers will return to the standing restart controlled by the race director. This is going to cause a very messy restart, and it could even screw up the race leaders. So, Brett, Kyle, your thoughts on this. Is this going to be a good thing, or are we going to see a buttload of F1 cars break?
I think we're going to see an accident.
And Kyle.
I think it depends. You know, I know you saw the IndyCar, the start of the Grand Prix of Indianapolis, you know, when Sebastian Cavendish didn't get going. I think it just depends, honestly. I guess his car didn't get going, so Cavendish's car didn't get going, and that's what caused all that. But, you know, it just depends. I mean, I need to know. I know some Formula One, but I don't know a lot. But I think it just depends on how the cars are made and they don't stall on the start. I think everything will be okay.
Alrighty, and my thoughts on it is that let's just see what happens and see if it works. Then the last thing here in the F1 sneak preview, following the backlash over the ugly nose designs in 2014, the FIA has moved to amend the rules surrounding nose designs for the 2015 season. Now, dig this, and see if you can follow along. Noses will now be lower than in 2014, retain a minimum cross section, but they must taper to a point at a fixed linear rate, efficiently outlawing the dramatic finger shape seen in the 2014 season in favor of a more gradual shape. And also, furthermore, you can't really have, like, the twin tusk deal that the Lotus team had on its E22 chassis. Now, obviously, there's no schematics or anything about these new noses yet, but the way that I see it, it actually reminds me of a very old car. Go to Google, and you guys can do this during the show, go to Google and type in Braun GP and pull up the first picture that you see of the actual car and take a look at its nose. That nose, I think, is kind of where F1 is trying to go to because it started out fine, and then it basically slopes down and kind of creates this streamline effect. And if that's the case, then probably what's going to happen is that we're probably going to see a lot of noses take a nosedive, no pun intended, to be lowered to the ground. Now, as long as we don't have any snuffleupagus noses or anything like that, I think we're going to be just fine. So we'll see what happens. In fact, I don't think we're going to get a picture of what these new noses might look like till maybe closer to the end of the year. So, like, maybe when we get to the championship race in Abu Dhabi, we'll see what happens. So, anyway, that's it for your sneak preview in 2015. And so, you didn't hear anything. Got it? Good. All right. So let's see here. Okay. Before we get into picks, we also got Formula E, which is the new electronic open-wheel car. Hang on one minute second. Make sure I got... Okay, good. I was just checking to make sure I still got battery, and I definitely do. We're not going to get too much into this because I know that we're running a little behind here because we got so much to cover and we need to get to our picks. So I'll just say this really quickly. The calendar has been sort of set for the Formula E series, and they're going to start in September of this year and end in June next year. It's all going to be free circuit. So let's take a look at it. Opening the series on September 13, 2014, they'll be running at Beijing, China, in the streets of Beijing, I believe. Then it's off to Malaysia in October on the 18th. And then it's off to Uruguay on December 13th. So it's running at the city Punta del Este, I believe is what you pronounce it. Then on January 10th, after the holidays are done, it's Argentina for the running of the Buenos Aires. February 14th, Valentine's Day, is to be announced. I'm not sure what day is going to go there. And then it's 2 months in the States. They'll be going to Miami on March 14th. And check this out, folks. They will be going to Long Beach on the 4th of April, but they will not be running the Long Beach GP circuit. They'll be running a different configuration. Then it's off to Monaco on May 9th in Monte Carlo, and then Berlin, Germany on May 30th, and then the United Kingdom in London to crown the champion on June 27, 2015. So we'll do drivers and stuff like that in another show. But I think right now we should start to put our money where our mouth is and do some picking. So now we've come to the part of the show where we definitely have our picks. Now, I do want to also bring Kyle up to date on this because we said that anything can happen in any of these races. And when we get to the Nationwide series, there is one rule that actually applies to this show, and we'll talk about that as we get over there. So we're going to start things off in the F1 series. I have my magic. Where is it? My magic what? Okay, how about my magic diecast trunk off of my first ever Jeff Gordon diecast thing? So I'm going to put our names in there, shake it up a little bit, and see if we can flip them around a little bit. All right, let's see if he's going to go first. I open up the trunk, and the first name out of the hat or first name out of the trunk for F1 is going to be Brett.
Well, this weekend, I'm probably running out of Formula One picks, so I'm going to go with Jenson Button.
Ooh, Jenson Button on the McLaren Mercedes. Let me get my pen working here. So Jenson Button, that's not a bad pick, and he's definitely a popular one. Now it's down between me and Kyle, who's going to get the next pick in. Let's see. Is it going to be me? Is it going to be Kyle? It's going to go to Kyle.
Okay, so since I had the last pick right, and that was Nico Rosberg, I'm going to go with his teammate. I think Lewis Hamilton's due for one. No, he hasn't won in 4 weeks, and he won four straight. So I think Lewis Hamilton's going to look for some redemption here and get the win.
Oh, well, what do you know? You stole my pick. I was finally going to pick Lewis Hamilton for this thing, and you stole it. So that means I'm going to have to be a teammate to either Brett or be a teammate to you, and I think I'm going to be a teammate to you, Kyle. So I'm going to take Nico Rosberg for this race.
You're welcome, Mike.
you know what? Both picks are pretty good. I mean, I will give him that. There we go. Get his name in there. Okay. So I got Nico Rosberg, Brett has Jenson Button, and Kyle has Lewis Hamilton. Now we go over to the Nationwide series. All the names go back into the trunk of this car.
Any car?
Shake it up one more.
Hey, Glenn.
Yeah, this is
any car.
Yep, this is for the Pocono 500. Here we go. First name out of the hat. It's going to be me. And I think I'm kind of a gambling man in a way. And so I think I'm going to gamble a little bit here and say that he does pull off the Triple Crown. So I'm going to say that the number 28 Sundrop Honda of Ryan Hunter-Reay for this race. Let's get his name in there. All right. Now it's down between Brett and Kyle. Who's going to get the next pick in? Let's see. Spin the car around. Do donuts. Maybe even do a backflip. I don't know. And it's going to go to Kyle next.
You know, I've been kicking this pick around for a couple of days. And, you know, I know Marco Andretti was so strong last year with what he did in the Chevrolet. But Tom was just telling me Juan Pablo Montoya is going to have redemption. And, you know, he's been hot the last couple of weeks, you know, finishing runner-up in race one in Houston and finishing third in Texas. I'm going to go Juan Pablo Montoya. I think he's going to get his second IndyCar Series victory this weekend.
Woo! Juan Pablo Montoya. That's definitely not a bad pick. If I can get his name in there, Montoya. There we go. That's it. My pick for some reason. Okay, Brent. That means it's down to you. So are you going to be a teammate to me or Kyle, or are you going with a different team?
All right. Well, this driver, you know, impressed me during the Indianapolis 500, and. You know, you can't, you know, he's definitely going to be strong. So, and a car is sponsored by Hitachi and a driver that drives for Penske Racing. I'm going to pull a fake, and I'm going to go with Marco Andretti.
Whoa! Okay. So, Marco Andretti.
He's going to go for the hometown win there.
And I thought Kyle was going to steal him there for a second. I thought I was going to have to go over to Kyle's house and I don't know.
Oh, well, thank God we didn't. So I got Ryan Hunter-Reay, Brett has Marco Andretti, and Kyle has Juan Pablo Montoya. I'm going to say right now, this will be a very, very, very close race. Hopefully, Marco Andretti, hopefully for the first. For the fans, but obviously, you know, picks are a different story. But hopefully Marco Andretti breaks the Andretti curse. So now we go into the Nationwide Series, and here's the rule that we were talking about. There are 45 cars on the entry list, and there's a couple of good picks here that are go-or-go-home cars. And depending on where they are in the points, will basically determine if they make the race or not. And so, Kyle, keep this in mind. If you pick a go-or-go-home driver, like let's say if you chose David Reagan or Bobby Gearhart or John West Townley, if qualifying gets rained out and that driver has to go home, you are given a free swap to go to any driver that hasn't been picked on tonight's show. So that would mean that if you were to take John West Townley and he doesn't qualify, then you could choose any other car that was in the race. I wanted to make that the rule perfectly clear. So let's go ahead. Here we go. Names again. Back into the trunk. Shake it up again. That's probably the hood that you hear in the background. This is the Nationwide Series race. The Subway Firecracker 250, and Brett's going to lead us off. Brett?
What? Oh.
Guy?
Sorry.
all of a sudden I hear dead air, and I'm like, what the hell?
Sorry about that. I was reading the text, and you caught me while I was doing that. But, you know, certainly some good drivers on the entry list. You know, the one that always stands out to me, he hasn't had a good year so far in the Stonecast Series, and he's the only driver at Hendrick Motorsports who doesn't have a victory. I'm going to go with Casey Kane in car 5.
Ooh, good pick. So Casey Kane for Brett. So now it's going to be, it's either going to be me or Kyle. Let's see what we got here. And it's going to go to Kyle.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be an interesting weekend, at least for the Nationwide Series. Only 5 Cup guys in it. You know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And I've been picking this. I've been throwing these picks around. You know, it's not easy to pick. But I'm going to go with the February winner and be a teammate to Brett. I'm going to go with Regan Smith. And your points leader as well.
Ooh, Regan Smith. Well, you know what? Here's the funny part. That was who I had picked before the show. And I basically was tossing around two picks. And you, my friend, just helped me out. Because I think it's going to be one of us in victory lane, but it's not going to be, but it could be any kind of combination, but I hope that you, with Regan Smith and Brett with Casey King, are pushing Chase Elliott in the victory lane. I'm going with the number 9 Napa know-how Chevy Camaro. I almost said Corvette. And I think the reason why is because I'm so used to saying Corvette. And, of course, you know, before we went on the air, Prince was playing on the radio, and it happened to be Little Red Corvette, so I still got that in my head. So I got Chase Elliott, Brett has Casey King, and Kyle has Regan Smith. Sorry, Bill Elliott fans. And you know what? For the first time ever in this nationwide series, we have picked all cars of the JR Motorsports team. So we got JR Motorsports pretty much penned right there.
Yeah, pretty much. I just want to add something quick with the nationwide series. Also, it's the first race for the Dash for Cash as well. So the top four nationwide regulars, they will be in the running for, I think, $100,000 in New Hampshire. So I'm pretty sure that's how it works.
Yep. All right. So now, here we go. The Cope 0400. It was formerly known as the Pepsi 400. That's what a lot of people have, known this race by. So anything could happen. So here we go. Names back into the trunk. Gonna shake this up. Here we go again. All right. Let's see who's going to pick first, and it's going to go to, it's going to go to me. And pretty much, hang on one second. Before I give my pick for the Cup Series race, I just saw Jeff Gordon's car that he's going to run, and I love it already. It's blue with the blue flames, but Gordon is not my pick for this race, because Gordon has had some tough luck in this race, and I don't know if he can pull it off, but we'll see what happens. But no, for me, I think some people already know who I'm taking. He's already won this year, but I think he's already won twice, and he has his own nation behind him. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm taking that camo National Guard car of Dale Earnhardt Jr. So Dale Earnhardt Jr. for me. Now let's see if it's either Brett or Kyle who will go next, shake up the car again. And it's going to go to Kyle.
Well, I was thinking about Dale Jr., but, you know, it's not life or death for me. You know what happens. But, Dale Jr. was one of my top picks. But I think, you know, when I look at I looked over the race this weekend, you know, with restrictor plate racing, you know, you've seen some guys stand out. You know, you had Dale Jr. looking for the sweep. He's in the same position as Jimmy Johnson was last year, looking to sweep both Daytona races. So I looked this over, and, you know, he had a good speed weeks. Finished second in the 500, won Talladega. I'm going to go with Denny Hamlin.
Ooh, Denny Hamlin. Okay, so Hamlin for Kyle. And so now, Brett, it's up to you.
Well, this driver has certainly dominated this race the last several years. And, he likes to close off a lot of races. And this week I'm kind of pulling the big guns, as I like to call it. And so I'm going to pick the number 4, or I'm sorry, I'm going to pick the number 14 of Tony Stewart.
Whoa, Tony Stewart. All right. Interesting pick there. Stewart hasn't been faring too well, but we'll see what happens with him for this race. So I got Dale Earnhardt Jr., Brett has Tony Stewart, and Kyle has Denny Hamlin. And just like that, we come to the very end of the show. So why don't we go ahead and do our final thoughts? I'll go ahead and do mine because I got to get off of this thing. You can follow me on Twitter at IndyCarGL2488. You can also friend me on Facebook as well. My Facebook link is in my bio on Twitter. And, of course, follow me on Instagram, YouTube, all those other places that I'm on. And, good luck to everybody's picks. I think that we're going to see some exciting racing from NASCAR. IndyCar, yeah, it might be exciting to some, and some will be like, when are we going to get to Iowa? So we'll see what happens. But anyway, hope to see you guys all next weekend as we review all the 4th of July stuff. And everybody, please be safe around fireworks.
Okay.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Magda, also my Facebook page as well. You could add me on there. I have lifekyle.com. You'll have the Overdrive show. I have to start up again. I have a lot coming in this next month. I'll be at the IndyCar weekend this weekend at Pocono. And, I just thought of this yesterday. I'm actually going to be at 3 of the next 5 Sprint Cup Series races, so it's going to be a busy month and a half for sure, but I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm really looking forward to this weekend's races, and we'll see what happens.
And you can find me on Twitter at NASCAR Showdown or Facebook at Brett Wadeham, and should be an awesome week of action. And thank you, Joseph, Kyle, and Glenn, and thank you to our listeners and myself. And hope everyone has a great weekend. Enjoy the 4th of July and stay safe around fireworks. And talk to you all next Wednesday night.
I'll see you.